coming up on KUCB News, GCI is one step closer to bringing fiber optic broadband to the Aleutians. And as marine heat waves continue, the impact on fisheries could be devastating. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. GCI says it won't move forward with bringing fiber optic service to Unalaska at this time if they don't receive a large grant from the USDA. The company has put in an application for a $25 million grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Utilities Service to bring fiber optic broadband connection to communities along the Aleutian Island chain. Dan Boyette, vice president of GCI, says the proposed project would bring undersea fiber optic cable from Kodiak to Unalaska, stopping in a total of 11 communities and spanning approximately 860 miles.
Our general plan is to bring an undersea fiber optic cable out to Unalaska that would hook into our existing undersea fiber optic infrastructure in Kodiak. We then would circle through Whale Pass on the north end of Kodiak Island, and go into Larson Bay, and then from Larson Bay to Chicnik Bay, and then on down the chain, making stops in Sandpoint, King Cove, Akutan, and then finally on Alaska.
The company plans to install some branching units to extend service to other places along the way, like Falls Pass and Perryville, which aren't in the initial project scope, but have potential for fiber optic in the future. Boyette says they've been working on a business case for a number of years, and the overall cost is high, coming in at $60 million. He says this high cost makes the business case difficult for them to follow through on, as a private corporation, which has a responsibility to its shareholders.
So in order to get that return on investment down to what's appropriate for a company like ours, this Reconnect program really fit quite well. So we applied for a grant of $25 million from them. And that takes the payback or the return on investment down to a period of years that's acceptable to us and our parent corporation, Liberty.
Boyette says he expects to hear if they've received the $25 million award from the Rural Utilities Service sometime between June and September. There are seven applicants in total from Alaska, competing for a pot of $200 million. If they receive the grant, GCI plans to pay for the remainder of the project, $35 million, with its own capital. But if not...
If we do not get the grant award, we won't move forward at this time. That's not to say that we won't apply again in round three. Hopefully we won't have to do that, but I know that there will be future rounds because the federal government is very determined to use this program to get broadband out throughout rural America, just like they did in the 20s and 30s when they used this same program, the Rural Utility Service, to get electrification throughout rural America.
Boyette says the company is already assembling a project team and has been working with an undersea engineer. They are also working to get the permitting process in Unalaska underway as soon as possible, in anticipation of receiving the grant award. If all goes according to plan, Boyette says he anticipates the company will begin the project in earnest in January of 2021 and will be able to initiate service in Unalaska towards the end of 2022. It will be roughly a two-year process. Boyette says the company has been working its way through rural Alaska, trying to build better communications facilities, and that it's really time for communities throughout the Aleutian chain to get better connectivity.
The Aleutian chain is the last part of Alaska that does not have terrestrial broadband service. In today's world, remaining on satellite service tends to holds back the business community. By bringing fiber optic terrestrial style broadband, all those barriers go away. So I think that the ability for Unalaska's economy, as well as the economies of King Cove, Sandpoint, and so on, to grow and help those communities become more thriving places, I think is a very real thing. We believe it's going to be transformational.
While many Unalaskans look forward to a broadband fiber optic connection, local internet provider Optimera could be in trouble. But CEO Emmett Fitch, who says the company has looked at bringing fiber optic as well as a microwave link to the community in the past, says he's optimistic.
If GCI is successful in their application and are able to get the service in place, then hopefully we can, you know, buy capacity from them and continue to do what we're doing. You can't compete satellite versus fiber for the most part. If a fiber lands, it's going to be whoever controls that fiber is going to pretty much own all the communications or has the ability to.
Fitch says that GCI has said in the past that they want to work with other providers in the area. So if GCI is successful in bringing fiber optic service to the Aleutians, he says the two companies will hopefully be able to collaborate so that Optimera will be able to continue providing service to Unalaska. Meanwhile, the state of Alaska announced no new cases of COVID-19 yesterday, keeping the statewide total at 399. 348 people are reported recovered from the disease, and there have been 10 deaths. To date, there are no known cases in Unalaska. 88 people have been tested at Aleutian Family and Health Services. All have confirmed negative test results. And as Alaska's daily new case numbers have remained in the single digits for weeks now, Governor Mike Dunleavy announced yesterday that all Alaska businesses can open at full capacity starting Friday morning, including gyms, bars, and restaurants. Dunleavy listed the changes at a news conference last night.
All businesses are open. All houses of worship are open. Libraries and museums will be open. All recreational activities will be open. All sports activities will be open. So it'll all be open just like it was prior to the virus.
The new announcement marks the governor's latest major lift of coronavirus-related restrictions. Dunleavy says Alaskans have helped keep the number of coronavirus cases in the state low. That has given the state time to build up testing and other health care needs.
The understanding we had with the people of Alaska was give us some time to build up our health care capacity to deal with what we thought was going to be a spike. The people of Alaska have given us that time. It's come with great sacrifice. And so we believe we can manage this virus. We have to manage this virus.
Dunleavy says the state expects the number of coronavirus cases in Alaska to increase as mandates ease and businesses reopen. He says the state is prepared to deal with that. Some state mandates remain in place for now. That includes the 14-day quarantine requirement for people traveling into Alaska. Also, classrooms will remain closed as the school year comes to an end. Alaska communities may also decide to loosen restrictions more slowly than the state government. Over the last decade, two massive marine heat waves, better known as blobs, swept the North Pacific Ocean, raising surface temperatures more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit, causing blooms of toxic algae and major die-offs in the ecosystem. A new study from the University of British Columbia reports that as these heat waves continue, they may have far more devastating implications to fisheries than previously predicted. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Kavitha George reports.
Climate scientists have known for years that global warming would have devastating long-term impacts on marine species. Already, fast-melting Bering Sea ice is threatening spotted seals and other marine mammals. Warming Gulf of Alaska waters wiped out cod eggs in 2019, causing a crash in cod stocks. Record warm waters in the Yukon River last summer killed thousands of migrating salmon with heat stress. While climate change is steadily warming oceans all over the world, marine heat waves like the two North Pacific blobs are causing more dramatic swings in surface temperatures. In 2014 and again in 2019, ocean temperatures in Alaska rose as much as 5 degrees Fahrenheit. William Chung, a professor at the University of British Columbia's Institute for the Oceans and Fisheries, says marine heat waves will be frequent, and that will double the damage to Northeast Pacific fisheries.
The normal is actually changing over time. The normal now is cooler than the normal in the future for 50 or even 100 years later. And then on top of that, we add an additional few degrees Celsius. And so that would create additional challenges to fish stocks and fisheries.
Chung co-authored a report analyzing the impacts of marine heat waves on Northeast Pacific fisheries. The study teased out the impacts of high-intensity heat waves from the average effects of a warming climate over time. The findings show that by 2050, marine heat waves will double the impact to important fisheries species like pollock, cod, and salmon over previous predictions that only took into account the effects of climate change. It's an alarming forecast for Alaska, where seafood is a $5.6 billion industry and the state's largest export after oil and natural gas. Fisheries are the primary economic driver for coastal Alaskan communities and carry a globally recognized reputation for healthy management, even as climate change threatens the future of many essential stocks. According to Alaska Sea Grant, more than 100,000 Alaska natives and non-natives in rural communities rely on healthy fish stocks for subsistence living.
In our analysis, we showed that it will lead to a variety of impacts on fish stocks, like decrease in biomass, decrease in potential catches, driving changes in their distribution from where they are living now.
The study says previous research greatly underestimated the risk to fish stocks in a warming ocean. For instance, prior studies suggested sockeye salmon stocks in the Gulf of Alaska would fall 10 to 20% in the next 50 years due to climate change. Chung's team estimates the drop is more like 20 to 40% when you take heat waves into account. Chung says the compounded impact of heat waves will affect the entire ecosystem, including marine mammals and seabirds that rely on fish for food. The effects may already be present, he says, in the sweeping seabird die-offs that left almost a million birds starved to death along the West Coast in 2015 during the first blob. Chung says there's still a lot of research to be done on the impacts to the humans who rely on those fish, too.
And then we also look at the implications for the dependent human communities, particularly on fishers and fisheries that are dependent on this species. We are trying to quantify the economics as well as the social impacts associated with marine heat wave impact.
The new study models ocean changes on a macro scale. Ann Hollowood, who studies fish stocks for the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, says predictions about precisely how and when commercial fish stocks will be impacted is an ongoing field of work.
The implications of how fish move and their availability to coastal communities to harvest them is quite an important issue. To model the very nearshore ocean processes requires a finer scale resolution model than the models that William was using. You actually need to downscale the global ocean conditions.
Hollowood says it's still too soon to tell how marine heat waves will impact the future of commercial fisheries, and regulatory agencies are already adopting protocols to use research from Chung and other scientists to adapt management plans. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
The Board of Education for the Unalaska City School District meets tonight via telephone conference call. At their regular meeting, members will be discussing the remaining teacher vacancy as well as district financials. The school board meets tonight at 7 o'clock over teleconference. You can find the access number on the school district's website at ucsd.net or listen live here on 89.7 FM. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.